And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is July 4th, 2016, the U.S. Independence Day. Happy birthday, America. And this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to join forces with one of Israel's best elite person that can tell us all what we need to know about the challenges that we're facing. We are really honored to have a professor, of honorary professor Itai Gil, a guy that have his credential for anti-terrorism, intelligence, and all what it takes to promote peace, but being vigilant to what we need to do. Itai, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Orly. Thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor.
I'm so happy to have you. Listen, not every day I can manage to bring one of the best Israeli elite to the show, and this is like a gift for America because we love America so much, and we know in this time and age, America is facing the challenges to keep everybody safe, and we in Israel, we are pretty prepared mentally. Now, I want you to tell us what it takes to prepare a nation to the next game, the game that we're all playing now against the terrorism.
Well, first of all, it's a real big question and it's a great one. What does it really take to protect a nation, homeland security, foreign and domestic? At the moment, the United States, the biggest threat they're confronting is the domestic. It means, from our point of view as experts in counter-terror warfare, and I served Elite Special Forces counter-terror warfare here in Israel for 14 years active duty. I'm still serving as an officer, as a captain in the Elite Special Forces as reserves. So I do get called in once in a while when we have our own problems. And so I'm saying that from the combined service that I have and experiences, and I have many, many, many fellow American friends that are elite units as well, SEALs, Delta Rangers, and so on. So I know many, many, and there's a lot of joint programs. America and Israel are joining forces on battling terrorism globally. And we do have teams coming to Israel once in a while for some specialized training. So it's an honor for us as well to share information. The biggest problem we're actually challenging right now is the domestic problem. And how do we know who's a good guy, who's a bad guy? And in
Absolutely.
general, it's very unfortunate to say, but all terrorist attacks happen by radical Muslims. By saying this, I'm defining that. It doesn't mean that all Muslims, when we wake up in the morning, it means they're bad, but we do have a big problem with radical cells. And I would say there's sleeping cells that are actually waiting to launch based on ideology, some type of crazy phobia that these people just have this fanatic faith about radical Islam. And when they wake up in the morning, suddenly something can trigger certain emotions. From a lone wolf attack or from a coordinated attack by a small group of people that were maybe born in the United States, and I don't think they share the same values we do on the 4th of July. I know that for 100%. I know there's radical camps in the United States right now in many, many different locations where people do have permits to carry arms and go and train and, handle weapons and are these law-abiding citizens? They may disguise themselves as sheep, but they're not. And the biggest problem we have is these guys can just wake up anytime in the morning and launch a massacre, just like we witnessed recently, unfortunately, in Orlando. And if we go, a little bit back into Paris, it's not just a national threat for the United States. Most of the world is targeted by radical cells. Even if you look what happened recently in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a mainstream Muslim country, but still you have radicals that will come and kill. So how do we know the difference between good people and bad people? That's the biggest problem.
Right.
Then
right.
The second layer that needs to be addressed is, what skills can we give the civilians if there was an attempt on civilian lives? What can be done about it?
So, and that's what I wanted you to talk about, because you did write a book that it's incredible, book, because it was ahead of the time, and you actually foreseed that the attack, the terrorism that is going to take place. And tell us what kind of preparation people have. And I know that you are in the middle of doing a great plan to promote civil protection. Can you address this? Because we all talk about the issues
When I go back into the history of my young days in the service, and we were going to get real problematic bad guys, it turned out to be that a few weeks or a few months later, there's another bad guy that wants to take his position and cause the same type of harm. Launch a suicide terrorist attack, or, you know, shoot in public, or make a homemade bomb and blow up a bus, or so on. And these things that, you know, from the early 80s, when I was in the service, and later on into the 90s, in the mid-90s, these things are now spreading out all over the world, Europe and the United States. And when I decided to write my book, and I'm very honored that you mentioned the book, that it came out in 2004. And
amazing.
I tried to reach out to people. You know, I remember the Beslan terrorist attack that killed so many children in Russia, okay? And it was a Muslim
cell. Okay, mention the name of the book. It's a Stopping
Suicide. It's called The Citizen's Guide to Stopping Suicide Terrorists by Paladin Press.
Unbelievable. And it's like you've been writing it for us today. This is like a book that was written.
And it's so applicable for today, because nothing has changed since I published that book. And it took me about a year to write the book and collect materials from my brain, you know, and put it down on paper. And when I wanted to make, my idea was to make a manual guide for the average civilian that wakes up in the morning. He's not a special forces guy. He's not even a Marine. He's just a simple civilian that has a 9-to-5 job, wife, kids, and God forbid if there's going to be a shootout in a shopping center. And we do have, unfortunately, many of those in the United States. And also in Israel,
the difference between the attacks in Israel, that the civilian are ready to act instead of the
other places in the world,
they hide up.
I will tell you something. You know, I mean, Israel was established in 48. And if you look at the history of the Jewish people, you know, after the Holocaust, you know, we're done taking crap from other people. We're just done. I mean, Israel is a very resilient nation. We do have our domestic problems, don't misunderstand, but every nation does. If you look around you in Europe, the Middle East, or the United States, everybody is suffering what we have been suffering for a long time. Is it a wake-up call to many people? Yes, indeed it is. And are people going to stand and fight united together to do something about it? That's another question that needs to be asked. Because I always wake up in the morning, and this is my line, this is my job. I train and educate people how to defend themselves. Now, when I say this, I'm not talking about building a militia or a guerrilla. No way. We're law-abiding citizens. But if you need to take action to defend your fellow friends, family, wife, children, or you're in a public place, and I can tell you, here in Israel is a classic example. Most of the civilians here in Israel have a permit for a concealed carry. Open carry, concealed carry. You need to remember that mandatory service here is by law. So you have here, I would say, thousands and thousands of people that are carrying arms legally, completely 100% stable people. It's not that you will have here a civilian that will walk into a public place or a school and start shooting civilians. I don't know of any incident like that in the history of Israel.
No,
yes, we do have criminals that will shoot one each other. And yes, we do have terrorism. But when someone tries to harm civilians, the law here is very clear. If I am witnessing someone stabbing somebody, You need to take action and prevent at all costs, even if it means to neutralize the threat by shooting that individual. Now, we do have our share of terrorism here, and most of the times, civilians that have good training will take action before even law enforcement arrives. And that happens many, many times. Me, myself, I have a concealed carry all the time, 24/7 with my family. Everywhere I go, I am carrying a gun with me. God forbid, if something was to go wrong, I am a highly trained individual. I will know what to do. And I know there's a lot of good law-abiding citizens that have proper training in this country. Now, in the United States, everybody's talking about the gun regulation.
Right.
And everybody asks me my opinion because, they think I'm this, expert. What do you think about guns? Well, it's a real strange debate because the more people you have, the more opinions you have. And probably my opinion doesn't mean I can satisfy everybody. But I can definitely say that if you had someone entering a public place with an AK-47 and you had one, two, or three well-trained guys with a firearm, they could probably neutralize the threat immediately. And look at what happened in Turkey just right now. I mean, AK-47s, suicide bombers, and everything. Look what happened in Paris. Look what happened in Orlando. I mean, if people don't have the mentality, and this is what I want to talk about, the mental condition and the resilience of the civilians. We're not born maybe this way because in the morning when we wake up, we just want to have our regular 9-to-5 job and we don't want to fight and disagree with anybody, okay? But if a crazy individual walks into a public place and starts opening fire, the bullets are flying. I mean, I'm talking about science and physics. The bullets will not stop, okay? If you're in the path of that projectile, you will be hit. Some of the injuries will be fatal and you'll pass away and you'll die. And some will be, you'll suffer the injury and you'll have, hopefully, you'll recover and everything's going to be okay. Maybe you'll have some trauma. The thing is, how do we stop a guy that's shooting with a gun in a public place? So first of all, science and proof says you need to have a good guy that knows how to handle a weapon to open fire upon someone that wants to come and kill you. Option number two is another layer of civilians that when that individual is going to be changing magazines, because that's what's happened in Orlando. The guy did shoot many, many, many rounds and no one did nothing. Now, unless he's a very highly trained guy that changes a magazine in 0.12 seconds, 1 second, 0.2, sorry, and he handles jams fantastic. And that would be a problem. But the average person, it takes quite a little bit of time under pressure. Remember, the terrorist is a little bit under pressure when he's doing that. People can assault him and attack him. Throw
no time, right.
Bags. There is time. There is time to fight back, especially when there's 100 people. I have
exactly,
done this tutor drill scientifically. I have videos. I've done this in schools with children. We can save so many lives if civilians were to do the Israeli method that I developed, my active shooter drill. I can save so many thousands of individuals, school students, teenagers, high school, universities, and just civilians anywhere.
So what you're saying, Itai, that right now we need to make a plan that every state will take the responsibility to teach its civilians to learn how to protect themselves in case of chaos, in case of terror attack, that nobody will stay ignorant to the fact that they can save their life by only understanding the difference between acting up or not acting. That will make the difference between life and death. And that's what I really, really happy that you're doing. Because if you bring this to America, like it's supposed to be.
I can tell you something. I was in the United States a while ago, and we did a drill at a school in Virginia. And we had approval from the school that we can do an assault in one of the classrooms. And the school did know we're going to have a drill, but they didn't know exactly what time and part of the day. We stormed a classroom with blanks, no projectile, just blanks for the noise. We popped into a classroom. I want to tell you, nobody checked. That individual that I sent into the classroom We even dressed him up a little bit suspicious. Have a cap on his head, a beard. The hood was on his head, you know, of some type of jacket. Walked into the school premises, went up to the second level, okay, second story. Walked in the corridor, opened one of the doors, and started mass shooting. The kids freaked out, started crying, panicking. Their first reaction was to go under the table.
Right.
We did have hidden cameras inside that classroom to capture that amazing moment. Later on, I took those children and I empowered them by drills for leadership and decision-making and working as a team. Instead of being slaughtered like sheep, how to work as a wolf pack. You right. see, humans do have the ability to survive. You know, we forgot from, you know, the Neanderthals, you know, caveman's time that, you know, if you didn't, you know, fight or flight, you perished. People need to learn to take care of themselves and their fellow friends, neighbors, loved ones, even civilians that they do not know in case of a crisis. Just like there's a fire evacuation drill from schools, there's an earthquake drill in some of the states.
An hurricane drill?
Hurricane drill?
Hurricane
but there is no active shooter drill that is being fully adopted by any of the states officially. I know there's some people trying to teach lockdowns and all these fancy flashy words. The truth is that in that specific drill that I have done, we even had people call the local police. It took 13 minutes for police to come because geographically the United States is a pretty big place and there's traffic and you're not having SWAT teams and helicopters hovering above schools and public places and fast rope into the classroom because you just can't secure every civilian in the United States 24/7. Law enforcement is doing their best, and I respect the people that wear the blue uniform.
I know.
That
they
disrespect
work hard.
Them, and the people that disrespect them and despise them are cowards. These men are doing the best job ever in their ability.
They put their life on the line. You better
believe
it. Of course.
And many policemen, unfortunately, get shot, you know, in their job, in their line of duty, you know.
Yes.
So first of all, we need to respect our law enforcement a lot more in the U.S., you know. And we need to pay
everywhere,
respect to
all everywhere. The men that That's worldwide.
And wear a uniform, you know. Bravo to all the men that went, you know, because the country sent them, and respect them. This is why, by the way, we have 4th of July in the United States. Freedom is not for free. People did have to take a stand and fight for it. Now, it's about time civilians, because we're forced into conditions, and in the special forces, we have a saying, you know, desperate times, extreme measures.
Right.
Everybody is now trying to say, you know, weapons need to be banned. I guarantee you, I am in speeches and lectures, and I just came back a while ago from the European Union and Czech Republic. We had a gathering about talking about the crisis with the refugees and terrorist attacks in Europe.
Right.
Even if we were to disarm all the civilians in Europe, what, you think the terrorists don't have access to arms? Criminals don't have access to arms? There is a black market of millions of illegal arms on the move 24/7. And someone is always planning to do something bad. And we need a lot of good guys that will stop them. So the truth is, if we take
so
you all are the weapons
gathering,
away from...
Itai, so you're gathering the group of the good guys and you're going to plan to train him. Because you were talking about the ex-vet that so many professionals are still young in spirit and still have... the ability to contribute, but they are not working and, you know, they're after the military, they are old, but they can be still useful for the civil
service. I want to tell you, you know, I think all military personnel from all the units around that serve in the U.S. Armed Forces, Air Force, Navy, military, name it, all the branches, need to be a little bit more embraced and loved and hugged, you know? That's what
Absolutely.
I think. They fought for their country.
Hallelujah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm looking, you know, our soldiers here in Israel, it's our society. We love our soldiers. When guys go to battle here, when they come home, they're pampered, they're loved, they're respected. If you serve here in Israel in an elite unit, you are highly respected. You will have people knocking on your door to offer you the best job as possible because they know you are a sergeant, you manage people. You can solve problems. You think big. People need to to take advantage of this massive amount of human resources that comes from military training, because there is a hierarchy, and we can use these people to defend the nation.
And it's an opportunity for new jobs. You know, people don't realize it. We need to have a whole fabric of society that is protected. And this vets, ex-vets that will be trained, not much, because they know they have the basic and they know they understand
exactly
and they know the drill.
I'm looking for a man or a woman that knows how to solve a problem. I mean, you know, you have people 9 to 5, they have an office job, they're appointed CEOs, managements and stuff. Of course, they know how to manage budgets and move people around. But I can definitely tell you, when you take top guys from the military, boy, do these guys know how to produce results. We're talking about, you know, some good quality men and women out there in the market that I can immediately bring them into the circle of work. If one state will say to me, Itai, you know what? Let's do a pilot. Let's train 1 million students in one state on your active shooter drill. Immediately in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start hiring veterans to train them how to teach. My concept of how to survive an active shooter assault in a public place. I need men like this. I want to work with men like this.
I know. That's why we are making a task team. To work together, and I'm here with you, of course. I'm helping, and I want people to come along. Give me your website and contact information where they can send a request.
Well, my website is real simple. It's called protect.expert. All my contact details are on that. Anybody can find me, even write my name, Itai Gill. Google, you can find us. We're very well known. Next year, you know, my company is 20 years old.
God bless you.
Yeah,
God
20 years old,
a
business
heart.
Of protecting people, saving lives. You know,
that's
my
is
mission.
A dedication. That's why you honorary professor, sir.
You know, when I joined, I honored you too. Thank you so much. You know, when I joined the service, you know, when you're a government agent in an elite unit, you ask any American guy, you get an average or maybe plus, you know, salary, you know, as a government so-called employee, okay? I mean,
right.
You think guys that served in my unit, they go there because they're going to become rich? No way.
Nobody.
But
you know.
The brotherhood and protecting and saving lives, that's our goal. When, you know, and, you know,
and
I'm
this
not
is what we need.
In Jewish, saving a life is the most valuable thing in the world. That causes the biggest joy ever, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm saying, you know. I mean, we all need to share the effort. A layer of good civilians. You know, over here in Israel, I want to tell you something. We have here something that's called the Civil Guard. It's a volunteer group that they pay their own money to volunteer. And there's 80,000 people that volunteer in the state of Israel to become the Civil Guard. All of them go through filtering and screening, background check. Okay, no disorders with, you know, alcoholism or drugs or whatever. Straightforward people. Almost all of them are ex-military, okay? Almost everybody of these gentlemen and women carry arms, okay? And they're entitled by the Israeli police if they see something suspicious. Now, that's a magic word. What is something suspicious? I'll talk about that in a second as well. So imagine in Israel that we're a very small nation of around 8 million. We have around, 35,000 policemen plus minus. That is a very small portion of the nation. But on any given second, you can have a volunteer that can identify something that looks suspicious behavior. And he can approach that individual and say, sir, he takes out this volunteer police card and say, sir, I need to conduct the check because, and it gives him the authority. Now, they're not allowed to abuse it. They will get in serious trouble if they did use that plastic card illegally. But you have here another 80,000 people that have two eyes. So it means you have 160,000 eyes that observe every day. Now let's talk about security cameras. Security cameras are dummies. They can see an incident, they can record it, but there's no response team to go and solve the conflict. So even if there's a camera inside the Orlando nightclub, or there's cameras inside the Turkish airport, or there's cameras inside the concert where the massacre happened in France. What I'm saying is cameras don't solve the problem. People think I'll invest tens of millions of dollars in making an infrastructure of a safe city with cameras. But what about having a multi-million dollar team that can go and fight off bad guys at any given second? That's the idea. Have public awareness. Advertise on the news. Listen, there's commercials about public safety and driving safe, right?
Right.
There's commercials about driving safe. Use your seatbelt, don't drink and drive, and so on. Why not have public awareness, you know, advertising or short-term courses? Why not teach in schools? What about civilians?
No,
they see a neighbor doing something strange, and they come forward and say, you know, sir, I do see something strange. This doesn't look right, and you need to report it. If people see something and they didn't report it because they're hiding information, they need to be held accountable. I mean, the wife of the terrorist of Orlando.
Itai, let's start with the fact that we want the civil people to come and join forces, yes, but let's not start punishing them before we are in action. Now, I'm running out of time because there is so much news that we have to cover, but I want to say that you guys are going to be so busy in the next year because you're going to have to cover so many states and so many countries around the globe, teaching them and explaining the world population that, you know, the war on terror is starting even at the doorstep of everybody.
Of course.
So we all have to be ready and you know, and be in charge once we're facing a challenge. All right?
Yes, ma'am. Itai, thank you so much.
For you, for coming on my show. God bless you. We'll talk to you soon. You know,
thank
we'll
you,
keep
God
updates.
Bless America. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Hello from Israel. Bye bye.
Thank you. That's sweetheart.
Bye.
Thank you. Oh, all the best, sunshine.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Ciao. All right. And we are back. That was incredible. This guy is really all together about the war on terror and knows what to do. And he's actually have the heart to teach to our children how to behave. And this is something that we really appreciate. I think that we deserve a song, some music for us. Happy 4th of children everywhere.
If tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars.
And we are back. This is our special 4th of July. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. You know, last week was really heavy duty news. And we got bombarded from all over, literally, actually, you know, bombs did fly over from Gaza to Israel. Then we had, of course, the situation in Iraq that escalating, and a lot of people died. The Turkey attack in the airport. And you can't even turn your head once and there is something going on the other side of the globe. And the question is, why are we letting this go on? And many people were thinking, you know, it's nothing we can do about it. But think again. Now, I'm here and it's between us all. You know, not many people can have this privilege to hear what I say because I'm reluctantly, abstain myself from talking to others because it's really, really tricky these days. The deal is like this. The balance of power in the Middle East is always about oil, of course, and about Russian versus America. Now, once the European Union put their foot in the door, they wanted to create a force. But they forgot that they are messing with the big mommy and the big daddy of America and Russia. So they expanded themselves and took England with them. England did Goody Two Shoes actually was playing nice. But then they realized that their money, the money that they have to pay for this VIP club, is way too much. And it's the poverty that the other country needs to, you know, sustain to get in this club is not really worth it. There was one quote that I always like. I said, stop trying to look rich because it might get you poor. You know, to be a rich European Union, it's not working. The country there are suffering. And we all realize that, and we all knew about that. The problem is, one second, we having our troops are never quitting here. Now, the idea that we have England leaving the European Union is something really incredible, because the balance of power is changing. And now we're going to have England in play, who can help the world. She's not subjected to the ruling and direction of the Germans, the French, and who else? Nobody. You guys understand? It took them a lot of years. And Nigel Farage is the guy that talks about it so much. Let's listen to him.
Good morning. Good morning. Funny, isn't it? Funny, isn't it? Thank you very much for that. Very warm welcome. How things have changed.
Just a second, Mr. Farage. Ladies and gentlemen. One major quality of democracy is that you listen to those, even if you don't share their opinion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Schulz. Isn't it funny? You know, when I came here 17 years ago, and I said that I wanted to lead a campaign to get Britain to leave the European Union, you all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you? And the reason you're so angry has been perfectly clear from all the angry exchanges this morning. You, as a political project, are in denial. You're in denial that your currency is failing. You're in denial. Well, just look at the Mediterranean. No. As a policy to impose poverty on Greece and the rest of the Mediterranean, you've done very well. And you're in denial over Mrs. Merkel's call last year for as many people as possible to cross the Mediterranean into the European Union has led to massive divisions between countries and within countries. But the biggest problem you've got, and the reason, the main reason the United Kingdom voted the way that it did, is you have, by stealth, by deception, without ever telling the truth to the British or the rest of the peoples of Europe, you have imposed upon them a political union. You've imposed upon them a political union. And when the people in 2005 in the Netherlands and France voted against that political union, when they rejected the constitution, you simply ignored them and brought the Lisbon Treaty in through the back door. What happened last Thursday was a remarkable result. It was indeed a seismic result, not just for British politics, for European politics, but perhaps even for global politics too. Because what the little people did, what the ordinary people did, what the people who have been oppressed over the last few years and seen their living standards go down, they rejected the multinationals, they rejected the merchant banks, they rejected big politics. And they said, actually, we want our country back. We want our fishing waters back. We want our borders back. We want to be an independent, self-governing, normal nation. And that is what we have done, and that is what must happen. And in doing so, we now offer a beacon of hope to Democrats across the rest of the European continent. I'll make one prediction this morning. The United Kingdom will not be the last member state to leave the European Union. So the question is, what do we do next? Now, it is up to the British government to invoke Article 50. And I have to say that I don't think we should spend too long in doing it. I totally agree, Mr. Juncker, that the British people have voted. We need to make sure that it happens. But what I would like to see is a grown-up and sensible attitude to how we negotiate a different relationship. Now I know that virtually none of you have ever done a proper job in your lives or worked in business or worked in trade or indeed ever created a job. But listen, just listen.
Herr Farage, Augenblick.
Mr. Farage, just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, I do understand that you're getting emotional, but you're acting like UKIP normally acts in this chamber, so please, don't imitate them. Mr. Farage, however, I would say one thing to you. The fact that you're claiming nobody has done a decent job in their life, you can't really say that. I'm sorry.
No, you're quite right, Mr. Schulz. UKIP used to protest against the establishment, and now the establishment protests against UKIP. So something has happened here. Let us listen to some simple, pragmatic economics. Between your countries and my country, we do an enormous amount of business in goods and services. That trade is mutually beneficial to both of us. That trade matters. If you were to decide to cut off your noses, to spite your faces, and to reject any idea of a sensible trade deal, the consequences would be far worse for you than it would be for us. And even no deal is better for the United Kingdom than the current rotten deal that we've got. But if we were to move to a position where tariffs were reintroduced on products like motor cars, then hundreds of thousands of German workers would risk losing their jobs. So why don't we just be pragmatic, sensible, grown up, realistic, and let's cut between us a sensible tariff-free deal and thereafter recognize that the United Kingdom will be your friend, that we will trade with you, we will cooperate with you, we will be your best friends in the world. But do that, do it sensibly, and allow us to go off and pursue our global ambitions and future. Thank you.
All right, and we are back. Listen, to have such incredible leadership in England is outstanding, because they did the incredible move to dismantle a very bad treaty that was ruining the country, ruining the all Europe. And actually, they say that you know a lover when you leave him. This European Union, they're trying to be really, really bad sports when they are threatening not to allow England to make a free trade agreement with the European Union, because we have, they say they want the freedom of movement. Now, America is the biggest, trader with the European Union, and there is no an agreement of free movement. So I don't know where they're coming from, and it's really childish, because this doesn't even stick. Now, we have another member of the Conservative, the Tory movement, that will follow for it, because he quit. He said that he removed England from the European Union, and that was his legacy, and that's where he's stepping down. And now we have to choose. They have to choose. Look, like we're watching. we have to choose to watch how they are going to elect the new candidate for the Tory leadership for the new prime minister of England. And I've been scrolling through the list of people that look decent, and you know, being in the political arena for quite some time, I usually capture the decent one. And I was captured by Dr. Liam Fox. Liam Fox was the former defense secretary, and there was in 2011 there was like a quit for some reason, and there is a compensation after that, so it means that it wasn't that bad of an apple. And I don't know if people do mistake or not, but we all normally do, because we are human. But he looks like a decent guy, and he's incredible. You know, there are so many things that I can say about this gentleman, and I would like to see him in a leadership position in England, because he sent a good message to the rest of the world. Somebody from outside can relate to him, and maybe giving him a chance, we can actually put him in a very good position. Having said that, I think we deserve some music. All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Now, we have to talk about the very sad news of the passing of Elie Wiesel, one of the incredible scholar and survivor of Holocaust, a guy that taught until the end of his day in the University of Boston. And I used to write to him because I really... saw him as the leader of the free world. His spirit was huge. He was one of Israel prince, and I think that he did everything in his power to bring along the spirit of mankind in the good side of it. His Nobel Prize winner, the book The Night, reflect on what he had to go through to come from the dark to the light. And I think we have some segment from him. Let's listen to him.
My young friends, in the next 10 minutes, I'm given 10 minutes, already 9, I will try and give you a few words that would simply reflect what I have tried to do with so many years of my life. First of all, remember that I am a teacher and a writer. The writer in me is a teacher. The teacher in me is a writer. As a writer, I learn, and as a teacher, I try to teach. But my passion for learning is what sustained me for many decades. I still am learning, and I confess to you, you may be disappointed, but in my university where I teach, Boston University, I love small classes. You are not a small class. But as you heard from Heather, that moments, life, remember that, life is not made of years, but of moments. Great moments, dark moments, sad moments, triumphant moments, the first time you meet each other, the first time you discover Shakespeare or Plato, the first time you are taken by a story written by someone that you never met, and that story takes you far away in time and in space and in life. But for this moment, which is ours now, I envy you. To begin is a mystery to me. That all of a sudden life changes because of that beginning. The first time you read a novel, the first time you have a teacher that inspires you, the first time you experience joy, true joy, simply by meeting a fellow student, the first time you feel the first beginning, the first sign of love, and the first time you acquire knowledge, and you know that that knowledge is something that is important in life, as it was in mine. Look, what have I learned? Small things, first of all. You say, free the children. The emphasis is on free, freedom. Are you free? Probably, to a limit. But remember, your freedom should never be at the expense of someone who has no freedom. Remember, you are not free simply to accept racism. Racism is ugly. Racism is stupid. Racism is absurd. Especially racism is never an option for culture. One day, you may open one of my books and you will see that although I have written more than 50 books, but actually what Heather said is true, Night is the first. And if you begin with Night, you will see that when I was your age, the world was a different world. At that time, totalitarian power existed in the world. On one hand, communism with its dark laboratories of death, and on the other hand, Nazism with its factories of death. And therefore, when you will have read it, you will ask yourselves, how did I, the person who speaks to you, manage not to survive? That was an accident. I have never done anything to survive. It is simply, if you are religious, you would say by miracle or by chance. But the fact is, how could one survive and speak about humanity, and speak about faith, faith in culture, faith in civilization. Now you heard Heather again quoting me that I am against indifference. You cannot enter a classroom with indifference. You are in your classrooms with your friends, future friends, and what do you learn? Not only that truth can never be an abstraction, but it must be part of a human being. You look around you, look at the neighbor sitting next to you. That young boy or girl may be a future Nobel Prize winner. Who else can tell you that but me? It's possible. Why not? It's all something that depends not on destiny but on yourself. It's not that you would want to win a prize, but you will do so many things in physics or in medicine for the welfare of humanity that you will get such a prize. But even if you don't get it, the fact that you are here to support and to help and to love and to assist and to explore on a journey with a person, another person, boy or girl, that's already a reward in itself. But what will you remember? You will remember, therefore, that indifference is not an option, just as racism is not, just as evil is not. I said that the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference, but that is true also of education. The opposite of knowledge is not ignorance, but indifference. The opposite of beauty is not ugliness, but indifference. The opposite of life is not death, but indifference to life and death. So there are so many things that you are learning. from each other, with each other. What I had to overcome is to see in the other, in the street, in the passerby, not an enemy, but a fellow sojourner. Not an enemy, but a friend, a companion, someone whose hand, when it is open, is a gift in itself. You will learn that nothing in the world justifies death. We are told. We are told that death is a blemish on creation. It is surely true. But remember that life is sacred, and therefore life cannot be replaced. Functions can be replaced, but not life. In my town.
And life cannot be replaced. God bless his soul. Elie Wiesel, the Nobel Prize winner, my hero, my guru, my inspiration, my muse. A man that I love deeply, and I'm sorry we lost him, but I'll have to keep him in his heart and in my prayer. And I ask everybody else to pray for their loved one, keep them safe, keep them happy, and keep America happy, because she is the mother liberty. She is the nation of all nation that give us the light to walk in freedom. And we honored to be a part of that great nation. And I'm honored to be an American citizen. And even though that I didn't see you for long, but I still love you, and you're always in my heart. God bless you all. God bless America. And be well. And God bless you all. Bye-bye.